This is the January 2013 Grillo Health Information presentation on resiliency. Here is the 15-minute talk by psychiatrist Will Vandeveer. His topic is lifestyle support for a healthy body.
My name is Will Vandeveer, and I'm a psychiatrist in Boulder. And I feel really honored to be here and to be a part of this community. So I'm going to jump right in with some exercises that I think are going to help everyone here feel into their resilience and build some by being here. Okay, so first, I was here for the trauma panel some months ago with Rohini and Bob Scare and Faith Cohen, and we talked about the effects of trauma on the nervous system. So tonight is, it's kind of fun for me to approach the same kind of challenges and topics from a different angle. So what I'd like to present here is the idea that challenges are actually necessary for us to build strength. So challenges with abundant resources lead to increased resilience. So we can't actually build resilience without challenges. We need to have those. So the message here has to do with three aspects of successful parenting, I would say. And these three aspects, all three are necessary. Are people familiar in the audience with this language of attunement, rupture, and repair? People know what that means? Okay, so I'll explain a little bit. In the 70s and 80s, a whole body of research was explored looking at relationships between infants and mothers. And what was studied was what's really needed for children to be successful and to be healthy. And it became apparent after some years of the research that having a so-called perfect parent or someone who's always in connection with the infant is not what's needed. It's kind of interesting, right? So all of this guilt that I feel as a parent is not necessary. It's not helpful. It's not helpful to be completely attuned all the time. So attunement is the time when you're with your child and you're really connected and you're engaged, the way Tom was talking about. What's so important with presence with children? And then the doorbell rings, right? And you have the mailman showing up. So you leave the attunement with your child and you go answer the door. And if your child's an infant, they might start screaming and yelling pretty quickly, right? So that's the rupture piece. And then you take the mail, you go back, you reconnect with your child, and that's the repair. So all three of these phases are necessary. And a lot of the problems that I see in my office have to do with long-term outcomes of not getting enough of one of these three things or getting too much of one of the three. So we need all three in relatively equal measure. Lots of attunement, some rupture, and the critical thing is the repair at the end of the rupture. So the good enough mother, which is a phrase that Tom used too in his talk, is what we're talking about here. The mother or the parent or the caregiver, the father, who is capable of being attuned, who does get distracted, and who comes back and addresses that by reconnecting through presence. So this is the other thing that can happen. Repeatedly experiencing challenges, for example, rupture without repair in infancy would be a good example of this. Or driving a car in an icy road and not being aware that the road is slippery. That would be a challenge with inadequate resources. And so this happening repeatedly in your body can lead to chronic stress. So I just thought I would put this slide up to be more specific about what I mean by chronic stress, the APA Stress in America report. So the important thing to me here is the social withdrawal piece, because one of the things that I'm going to cover tonight that I think is most important in addressing resiliency is social connection. Withdrawal is something that I think is a cultural disease, and in Brazil, I was just had a chance to go there in December for a week and experience a different culture where I saw a completely different approach to what it means to be social and to be in connection and community. And it opened my eyes to the problems that we have with isolation in a completely different way. Body effects of chronic stress. How many people can relate to any of these symptoms? Okay, I know I have these. Okay. So I just called these symptoms, you could call them experiences. I think as a physician, I suffer from the disease of calling experiences symptoms too much, okay? So it's an indication you need more resources. So here's our first exercise tonight. Building again on some elements of what Tom said, I want to invite people to first tune into what's happening in terms of sensation and emotion in your body. Just check. No right answer here. Just take a moment. Okay. And then I would like to invite everyone to stand up. Okay. Turn to someone nearby and introduce yourself. Okay. Okay. That's great. Okay. Okay. So now let's sit back down, please. I have a couple more things to say. Okay, thank you very much. So, as you sit down, here's your next assignment. Put your attention back inside your body. Look with your inner vision, or roll your eyes back, as the case may be. And just see, what are you feeling now? And is it different from before? Okay. Is anybody willing to share their experience? Just a word or two, what you're feeling? You can blurt it out. Or
more fluid.
More fluid.
Resonant.
Less isolated. Lighter. Great. Energized. Nice. So this is what you just did. So the activity of affiliation is something that's been studied a huge amount in primates, and it's good for you. So affiliation is a stress reducer. It increases resilience in animals. Baboons who are higher ranking enjoy more affiliation and have lower cortisol levels, fewer diseases. And they recover, interestingly enough, from cuts and scrapes faster than baboons who are lower ranking and have higher cortisol levels. Cortisol is a stress hormone. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And this is a great resource, really fun read, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. I won't ruin the punchline. It's really a fun book, Robert Sapolsky. So the autonomic nervous system is our apparatus for handling stress. It's the way that we respond to challenges. And broken down into sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. Is that language that people know or familiar with? Somewhat?
Yes.
Okay. So sympathetic nervous system is the fight or flight system. And it's mediated by cortisol and norepinephrine, which are hormones made in the adrenal glands. The adrenals are little glands that sit on top of the kidneys. And the parasympathetic nervous system is the relaxation and digestion nervous system in the body. And there are ways to increase the tone of either system depending on what activity you're doing. So one of the ways to increase parasympathetic activity and decrease sympathetic is by doing affiliative behaviors, picking fleas off of each other or saying hello, as the case may be. So what we're looking for is a healthy balance between these two systems. The sympathetic nervous system with the adrenal glands is meant to be able to serve you, to protect you, to give you the hormones that you need to get away from an acute predator or threat in your environment. The adrenals are not set up to chronically pump out cortisol and norepinephrine in response to the chronic stressors that we have in our culture. So the trouble that I see a lot is too much sympathetic tone and not enough parasympathetic tone. This is an interesting study of 17,000 Kaiser patients. It's called the Adverse Childhood Event Study, the ACE study. And what they found was that the number of adverse childhood events that you have in your history correlates directly with the risk of ischemic heart disease, liver disease, lung disease, miscarriage, smoking, alcoholism, sexually transmitted diseases, and other problems. And the kinds of adverse childhood events they were looking for were, for example, having a parent who was addicted to a substance, experiencing a divorce, having to deal with bullying or abuse. So these are situations where children often don't have the right kind of resources to meet the challenges that they need, and there can be long-lasting physical impacts on your health as a result of that. Okay, so this is Robert Sapolsky, one of my favorite researchers. He's a primatologist. And he was the guy who lived in the savannah in Africa with the baboons and shot darts into them and collected cortisol samples, blood samples, to study their physiology. So for the scientists in the room, because being in Boulder, you know, there's always a scientist in the room wherever I go. I wanted to talk about ways that you can understand resiliency from a more scientific perspective, or how can you measure it more objectively. So heart rate variability is a really interesting parameter that has come into focus in research more in the last 10 years than prior to that. And basically, I want to explain what it is and why it's important and what the research shows. So when you think of your heart rate, you know, healthy heart rate, 60 beats per minute, 80 beats per minute, somewhere in that range. The variability from one heartbeat to the next, from beat one to beat two, that distance in time is different, it turns out, from the distance in time between beat two and beat three. So there's a variability there, and that's what we're measuring when we're talking about heart rate variability. Does that make sense? Okay. So people with higher heart rate variability scores are live longer. They have fewer health risks, they're less likely to have a heart attack, and they're at much lower risk of having panic attacks and depression, anxiety disorders, and so forth. So the goal that you want to have with heart rate variability is a higher heart rate variability as opposed to a lower one. Let's see. So when you measure heart rate variability, you see higher heart rate variability and lower heart rate variability in a really smooth waveform. Okay, resiliency and longevity, pattern changes in acute stress states. What happens is your heart rate variability gets squelched, so you have a tighter, a lower range of heart rate variability, and it also has a choppier pattern. I'll show you what that looks like in just a second. So this is something that the Olympic trainers and athletes are using, is heart rate variability to see what state of resiliency their nervous system is in. Because it turns out that athletic performance is also correlated with being in good regulation with your nervous system. So this is, I took this reading myself with a handheld device. You can buy these on the internet for a couple $100. And you can see in the first, I was sitting in a coffee shop working on this talk, and in the you'd think that I'm a pretty well-resourced, pretty relaxed person. I sound relaxed, people tell me that at least. I don't usually feel relaxed, but I sound that way. Maybe that's why I can, you know, practice psychiatry. I don't know, but. So for the first minute or so, you see the red lines and the choppy form there. And I'm not under any acute stress. I don't have a predator in my environment. There's no good reason for me to have a heart rate variability that looks like that. And so I was just doing some abdominal breathing, and the form goes into a more sinusoidal, smoother curve. But it takes me a couple minutes to get there. So the point of this is not to tell you to go out and get one of these handheld devices. The point is that living in the culture that we live in, it's easy to be dysregulated. And it's important to have a lot of resources to help you stay in good regulation. Okay. So this this meditator has somatic awareness. Okay. She can feel in her body that there's a sensation of hunger, maybe. Right? Or maybe she's just having neurotic thoughts. Like, I'll just eat a cookie if I don't feel good when this is going on. The point of this slide is that to introduce the idea that being aware of what you're feeling in your body, like we did with the other exercise, is a really critical resource. It really helps your nervous system stay in better regulation. It's sort of like aligning what you know to be true in your thinking mind. You know, I'm feeling anxious, or my big toe hurts, or whatever it is, with what's happening in your body. So a lot of the misalignment that people have between what they're thinking and what they're feeling can show up in that way with reduced heart rate variability, for example. So what I'd like to show you is a simple exercise that has to do with breathing. So I'm going to call this breathing naturally as opposed to meditation. So breathing naturally is really about paying attention to your breathing. And I'd like to kind of describe the technique and then invite you to try it on for a minute or two. Paying attention to your breathing, the pattern of your breathing, without trying to alter it in any way. So this is a little different from other exercises you may have practiced or you may have heard about that are more involved in manipulating the pattern of your breathing. You know, people will tell you if you're anxious, well, take a deep breath. You'll be okay, take a deep breath. The problem with that is that it's manipulating, it's using your cortex, your thinking part of your brain, to manipulate something that your brainstem knows what you need better than your cortex. So if you take the thinking out of it and allow your breathing to be natural and just observe it, then you're letting your brainstem decide how fast it should be, how shallow or deep it should be. And then the balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide and the pattern of your breathing becomes more natural. And that's actually correlated better with resiliency and heart rate variability than trying to manipulate your breath. Does that make sense? Okay. So let's just take a minute. And you can begin by noticing what you're feeling in your body. Okay. And I might talk a little bit while you do this, if that's okay. Kind of correlate. And pay attention to the sensation of breathing. In other words, feel your rib cage expanding and contracting. Feel your belly moving in and out. Whatever shows up in your awareness. And just do that for a couple more breaths. So in the interest of time, I'm going to move to the next kind of concluding remarks here. How's anybody feeling right now after watching your body breathing? How does that feel physically? Any feedback? Okay. Nice. Great. Okay. So here's your basic toolkit. Affiliation. So the opposite of social isolation, making connections, reaching out, making the phone call, having the coffee, the tea, the lunch with a friend. Breath awareness, knowing what you're feeling in your body. And here's the longer list of things that I like to work with my clients on. Exercise, play, relaxation, good food, nature. Again, Boulder, wow, what a place to live, right? It's at our fingertips. And these are just, wanted to just throw out some kind of standard recommendations to give you an idea of what kinds of things. And of course, it's a very individual what works for people. So I really invite people to be creative and work, you know, work with yourself. Try to figure out what really turns you on, what makes sense for you. Relaxation, good food, lean protein.
Chocolate.
Dark chocolate with no sugar. Sushi, right. Okay. This is not Colorado, but... And good sleep. This is Sasha and Sprinkles, our cats. And they're enjoying some affiliation while they're asleep too, which is always helpful. So the take home, stress happens. Instead of focusing on trying to eliminate stress in your life, see if you can work on the other side of the equation and build up your strength and your resources to meet the challenges. And resiliency is an earned, it's like a merit badge in Boy Scouts, something that you have to work for and you earn it. And these are some books and resources that I like to recommend. So thanks for your attention.
This program was recorded by me, Shelley Schlender, on behalf of KGNU and the Grillo Center. The music is by Boulder's Little Lights Children's Choir. You can hear more of these programs, find hot links to the experts, and see video highlights by going to the website eatyourradio.org. Click on the Community tab and look for Grillo.